Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock after 1 second. You put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door just like me, just like Ken.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two, talking about the defense against the Cincinnati Bengals in the wild card game. Here doing it with Vas Larikos. Vas, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Kind of talking through here is making us, I think, a little cathartic.
Yeah, it's making me feel better. I mean, in a lot of ways. There's good things to look forward to in 2023. I think the Ravens, have shown themselves this season as even though they lost two of the three games, of being a pretty good matchup for the Bengals. And certainly two of the three games, they also didn't have Lamar Jackson, so there might be something to that as well. But I thought defensively, they looked a very good matchup for the Bengals. So we have some more thoughts to share on that in the second show.
Yeah, I think Mike McDonald really, as a defensive coordinator, should be a cause for a lot of optimism going forward. Finished out his first year very strong and trying maybe some little bit of unique, different things that maybe some other teams are doing and finding his advantage and getting comfortable. So that's, I think he was a coach of the year on the team this year. I don't know if you agree with that one.
Yeah, I think they did some good things on the offensive line. So Coach D, I think, deserves a lot of credit, as he always does, in terms of keeping that unit together. McDonald was the coordinator of the year. I think we can agree on that. But they really were having a great special teams year for a lot of the year. So Chris Horton deserves, you know, credit for that. Those are the three guys probably I would put in there. McDonald certainly showed, as the season moved along, really outstanding ability to adapt to what he had, to adapt to the circumstances, I think. And I do think he is potentially one of the good coordinators for a while now in the league. So hopefully the Ravens have got a young guy, and they basically, as many times as they failed with offensive coordinator, they've almost never failed at defensive coordinator. And even the worst defensive coordinator of all of Ravens history is probably Madison. Mm-hmm. And even he is not terribly bad. And a lot of people didn't like Pease, but Pease has a long record of success, high adaptability. I didn't like him basically turning away from the dime during his time with the Ravens, but I did like most of the things he did about adapting in game and being very effective at that, especially considering those defenses during that 2012 to 17 era that he was here were not particularly good.
Right. And I think those defenses were pretty short at cornerback, if I recall, most of the time. But Pease, I did think there's some similarity between McDonald and Pease, maybe, as far as, first of all, you know, avoiding dime usage, or not avoiding, but just not using dime as much. And also a little bit more of the bend, don't break mentality, as certainly is compared to a Martindale or a Ryan.
Yeah, Martindale, Ryan, definitely big time gamblers. Let's get back with gambling in a second, and that's important. But I want to thank our sponsor first. Not a gambling sponsor, this one, but nonetheless, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give that product a try. They've been very good to us. They have a good lime seltzer that comes recommended. Please give their product a try if you want to try and support the show. Other folks out there, the gambling thing comes up every once in a while, but defenses have to gamble a fair amount in today's NFL in order to win. You can't play soft defense. Why? Because the game has been made more and more for offenses. It's not really as much about the penalties and all that stuff. It's about increased quarterback accuracy generally. And the fact that particularly against four down football, it's just almost impossible to stop. I mean, what's your chance to stop a field goal drive with 2 minutes to go if the opponent has four down football? You gotta avoid that circumstance under, you know, all situations of the world if you can.
Yes, it's very difficult these days, especially against a Burrow or a Mahomes or a Allen or any of these good AFC young gunslingers. You have to get some negative plays. You have to get a tackle for loss or a penalty or a sack or a pass breakup. What do they call them? I can't recall. Come back to me on this one, because this is a good term, where they add up all those, not splash plays. There's actually a metric they use for it in college, and they track it. All tackle for loss, sack, forced fumble, quarterback hit, pass breakup, all combined, and how many total, you know, per game, really.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. And even then, when you're playing some of these guys like Mahomes, and it's fourth and 23, and they still make the play. Yeah. But it is what it is.
Yeah, you really need to be the whole what it takes to get another team off the field is just, it's gone so much up incrementally that they almost, in order to even up the game between the defense and offense and make it more like it was in the past. And I'm not saying that's the way that the game ought to go, but it's the way the game could go, is you'd have to change something like being 11 and a half yards for a first down or something. I mean, they'd really have to make a dramatic change like that. And they are, by the way, considering changes like that in baseball. They've already implemented some of it, but some's going in next season as well. This crapola with the shifts. I mean, they should never have to do that. That's shifting is ancient. And the other thing they're doing is they're changing the distance between the bases by making the bases larger. And so it's now going to be like 3 inches shorter from one base to the next, kind of thing. So it's
just they want more scoring. Everybody wants more scoring. I mean, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. As much as we're defensive purists, and I'm a defensive purist, and so a lot of times I'll make a point saying they should invest more in offense, not because I don't like defense. I love defense, but it's what's working, you know.
That's a good way to put it. Let's talk about the pass rush a little bit in this game, because I think this is an area where McDonald really shined in the last 2 weeks against Burrow, was coming up with a game plan that was very effective both times. Used numbers very sparingly again and greatly reduced deception in the second half. We'll get to that in just a minute, but there was quite a lot of that. You know, as I saw it, the goal was to contain Burrow, to try and cover those very dangerous receivers and take away the easy, quick throws, but also to exploit that offensive line. And they had a couple different ways they could try and do it. Didn't always work, and they ended up kind of sitting on just winning the one-on-one matchups, which ended up being, I think, a way that was very effective against Joe.
Definitely. And they had, obviously, they ended the game with two of their five starting the offensive linemen that they began the month with, I believe, or at least Collins went out 2 weeks ago, and then Kappa, and then Williams. So it really was, it seemed, let's keep everything in front of us. Let's prevent any explosive plays only in coverage, and then let's see what we can do up front, especially with Calais. And that was the one thing that I really noticed was in at least two or three times this game, he waited right until the ball was about to be snapped and then jumped over a gap at the last possible second, completely creating a play for the man behind him. And it was – that was some of their best – I think they could record two sacks on those plays.
Great underneath play by Calais. And Calais is still a guy at his age who has juice to go over on stunt plays, which is really – unusual. But the other thing he does is even when he's back there and you know, as an under player, you often get a good peel from one of those two blockers. You get them both at a 45 degree angle and you get a good peel from a player. And that creates an opportunity for a player like Campbell to just push right through that block and get in there for a sack or a pressure. But the other thing he did a very good job was getting his hands up. And the defense as a whole, I thought, played very good hands up football. I thought we saw it from Owe. I thought we saw it from Bowser. I thought we saw it from Campbell as well, certainly in this game. And and we always see it from Pierre Paul, but I don't think we actually saw a PD at the line of scrimmage. I might be wrong about that, but no, didn't mean they weren't checking.
There was about five balls it looked like they could have been. And I definitely noticed that as well. And that's how many of the interceptions this season, at least a few of them have come on that kind of play. And if you can do that, it was just such quick game. I mean, they were just running quick game, and that's just so hard to defend that.
You may see your coworkers cracking open a can in your 9 a.m. stand-up meeting, but it's most likely not beer. It's a New Mountain spring water called Liquid Death. You've heard me talk about this many times. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it'll brutally murder your thirst. Plus, its infinitely recyclable tallboy cans are helping to be a bring a death to plastic bottles. Did you know plastic's not even really recyclable anymore? It ends up just going to a landfill because it's not profitable to recycle. Meanwhile, aluminum is recyclable and profitable for recycling facilities. You guys know how much I love Liquid Death. It's in everything I do. I take it to work. I take it to the ball club. I take it when I'm out with the kids. I got them right here on my desk as I'm recording a podcast. I'm always with it. What's cool now is I'm seeing you guys on Twitter talk about how you're grabbing your cans and going to work. So send me those stories about what you're doing and how you're cracking open a tall boy in odd situations because, hey, it's water. And not only is it water, it's the best water that you can go out there and buy. It's cold. You can drink it with whatever you're doing. So going out there, get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool by going to liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Yeah.
You know, all you have to just get your hands up and hope sometimes.
Yeah, and the kind of defense the Ravens have where they're playing zone defense, eyes are in the backfield, but you know, the football is going to get found a lot of the time. I think the Ravens have been particularly unlucky with that this year. And I think it's a great sign going in next year for an increased interception total is that if you can do what Broderick Washington is, I think Broderick Washington might have five or now six passes defensed on the year. You know, Pierre Paul has had a good year. He had two in a row in one game. He had, mm-hmm. you know, he's had others. They've had a fair number of PDs, and I don't think they've really collected on. I do remember one by Hamilton being collected that way. And I'm trying to remember others, but just this weekend, you know, we see the double deflection interception. We saw one other play. Didn't Urban deflect one to somebody else on the line at one point this year?
Or was that? I don't remember. I don't remember. Okay. I'm sorry.
I think it might have been Urban deflecting one to Houston. Was for Houston's interception this year. If I might not have it correct. He may not have gotten an interception. But that's what I recall kind of in my head. It's on the kind of they're kind of on the right side of the line. He blocked it back. Literally, it was one of these passes where it wasn't blocked down. It was blocked directly into the hands of Houston pretty much for an interception. Not sure I remembered exactly correctly, but that's how I kind of am coming up with it. You know, one thing you look at in terms of pressures in this game, the Ravens had 36 total plays with pressure. Sorry, 36 total pass plays, and 13 of those they delivered a pressure, which is not that good, 36% overall. You know, you wouldn't want that for your typical game, but in a game where you're facing Burrow and so many of the balls are ball out quick, exactly trying to mitigate your pressure, that's actually a pretty damn good total. And you look at it, I want to make sure I get this correct here. He had ball out quick 16 times in this game and was good, but not great in those situations. It threw 90 for 93 yards with ball out quick. Now, when you have ball out quick, you're already truncating the sacks. Think about that. So you don't get any sacks if the ball's out quick, because by definition, they can't be on the same play. But he only had four incompletes on those passes, and they still only gained 5.8 yards per play, which is, they'd be upset with Joe Burrow if that were his season average in terms of yards per play. So that's a good thing when on a truncated above average set of passes, he only gets 5.8.
Right. And 5.1 total yards per pass on the entire game was a very good number. They were really just relying on, we're going to take what's underneath and see if Chase can pick up 4 yards after the catch. Yeah. You know, that's really what they were reduced to. So unfortunately the offense with the turnover and the 14 point swing, that's what doomed them. But obviously
they did not really get behind the defense very often, which is a key thing about this game. Is even though sometimes those throws are some of the quickest a quarterback can make, literally, if you know, a 7-step drop with a long bomb down the sideline. So you're trying to get single coverage. You're trying to not let the safety get there. This is like a Walsh thing where you hit him between 40 and 42 yards down the field. And that throw should be off in less than 2.2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And if it is, it generally will not give that safety time to react to that ball. And it also won't give time for a pass rush to get home in 2.2 seconds. The quarterback might take a hit under very limited situations. Most of the time, he's not going to even take a hit. And that ball is going to be out of there quickly. It's interesting that the Bengals, with the weapons they have, with Chase and his speed, with Higgins and his ability to out-muscle and out-leap other players, didn't really take advantage of that versus the Ravens' corners.
Right. The corners are playing soft, I thought, for the most part. You saw a few plays where they would come up and bump a little bit, but for the most part, they were playing soft. And the safeties, I thought, were also – they weren't necessarily pressing up. Just back to the ball out quick point again, I would be interested maybe this offseason to look at ball out quick numbers versus the Ravens defense versus other, league average. Because I think that they're way, way under. The Ravens have to be one of the most extreme. I mean, I watch a good bit of football. I'm not counting, calculating it. But even Tom Brady earlier tonight, I'm watching it, and he's holding the ball and holding the ball and holding the ball and waiting for Chris Godwin to come back around on a route. And you just don't see that against the Ravens. It's almost like pretty much every single team drills it into the quarterback the week you're playing the Ravens. You got to get the ball quick, and it's been like that for years, really.
Yeah, I mean, with the quality of inside linebacker the Ravens have this year in particular, ball out quick makes a ton of sense. In other years, it's made sense on other throws. But, when the Ravens have failed to have the diagnosis that they needed with the various guys they've had inside linebacker before Roquan arrived, including Patrick Queen, and we'll call him the old Patrick Queen, including the old Patrick Queen and other guys they've had in there too. Owosso is a slow to diagnose guy, and they've had other guys at inside linebacker who haven't been great. Mosley was great, But they had, you know, a bunch of guys who were pretty much slow to diagnose screen passes. Those plays just go for more yardage. You know, having Kyle Hamilton is a big freaking deal in terms of having a short zone, you know, essentially a short zone free safety. And the funny thing is it takes so much away from him to play that slot corner position, but incredibly he becomes free safety over a different area. He diagnoses to different spots on the field.
Right, right. And I'm sorry, we're on the pass rush section. We'll come back to Hamilton.
Sure, sure. Well, let's talk about a few more things here. Let's see, with ample time and space, and this is interesting, only 7 ample time and space opportunities out of 36 the whole game, so that's under 20%, 6.7 yards per throw. So good that they held them to under 20%, and good that they only got 6.7 yards per throw, because ATS opportunities, good quarterback, will typically pick you apart for 8 to 12 yards a throw, sometimes more than that if it's depending on who you're talking about. With pressure, there's 13 pressure plays. The Ravens only allowed 2.8 yards per throw. So it's really nice to get that high a percentage against a quarterback like Burrow, who's not going to allow a lot of pressure generally. And you do expect a lot of difference between your ATS and pressure throws, so it's not surprising. But that's still a very good pressure number. At Burrow, a quarterback we think about normally being able to beat pressure.
Especially with those receivers too. But that's been Burrow's, really his calling card is beating pressure. The Ravens are getting to the point finally where they can rush with 4 and disrupt the play with and still have enough extra bodies, especially with better safeties. Even going back to the Mosley era, the safety play was really, I think, part of the problem back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so we want to talk also about deceptive elements. Let's give that a quick run here, because this was one of the interesting changes as the game went along. So they had only 5 individual off-ball blitzes, and maybe we got to do them by numbers first. Let's do them by the numbers first, because that really has some indications to it too. They rushed 3 on 4 occasions, 14 yards on those 4 plays, 3.5 yards per play. Not a big sample size, but they were successful with a short rush. They rushed 4 29 times. I know I got to go to my spreadsheet or I won't have the correct numbers here because I didn't put it on the separate sheet. 1 second. So 4 times. This is really good. 29 times for 151 yards. That's 5.2 yards per play. 4 sacks on 29 4-man rushes. Now, to your point, that is fantastic 4-man rush percentage.
Right. People have been asking for that for a long time. And it seems like they finally have the pieces in place to do it.
Yeah.
And now, of course, you have to take into account that since his O-line was banged up. But still, I think Burrow's quick release, you know, negates that. And it's almost like you're playing a – so, yeah, 4-man rush with OA going forward. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, so for the entire year with a 4-man rush, they had a 6.1% sack rate. And I hope I have this correct. Let me see if this looks like 676 passes. This looks like the correct total for the season for 18 games. And a 15.2% sack rate with rushing 5. And that drops to a 0% sack rate when rushing 6. It's only 21 plays. Incredible. Only 21 plays the entire season. They rush 6. 0 plays. They rush 7 or more in 2022. I did not know that.
Wow.
But that is really amazing. 36 times they rushed 3. With 1 sack and 2.8 sack percentage, but also 6.3 yards per play. So interesting set of results there, but McDonald definitely way more conservative than pass rushers. We didn't really see the cover 0 blitz this year from the Ravens. It would have taken too much away from what they present to an opponent on the back end, I think, to do that. So while it was a staple of Martindale with guys like Deshaun Elliott playing center field, I think it made a lot of sense in those cases. It was not really with Marcus Williams and Stone and other, you know, true bracket defenders back there looking to for their predator prey relationships to work out.
Sure. So for the deceptive elements, I mean, I know it's a trade-off. So I thought they had McDonald did a nice job of crowding the line with bodies and bare front without leaving the back end exposed.
Yeah, they did. So simulated pressure we're talking about there, where they didn't really come with it, but they showed it. They did that 5 times during the game. The results, I'll just toss them out here. 13, 9, 10, 19, and an incomplete pass. So pretty effective, honestly, against simulated pressure on the game. And I think I put it in the notes we have here. So yeah, so simulated pressure, they had 10.2 yards per play. What was interesting about this, they still did 3 simulated pressures in the second half, but they did 4 stunts the entire game, and that really wasn't working. 8.0 yards per play, all in the first half. And then I think because some of those get called on field, especially when Campbell's out there and is quite a leader and there's no splits being called, he has the ability to just whip one up on the fly. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't working. And McDonald said, okay, we're going to just call that off. We've got a couple quarterback hits on that. That's nice, but we're taking too much risk. We're losing yardage on those plays. No more stunting in the second half. And they just shut that down. Off ball blitzes, they had 5 the entire game. 7 total yards on those plays. They had 2 sacks and 1 other pressure among those. But that was really very nice and very effective. And yet still in the second half, I want to say they had none. They had 1 blitz the entire second half, and it was on a 1st and 19 on that final drive. So they really shut down the deceptive elements after halftime, and were still very effective.
I think what McDonald was able to do was disguise the coverage on the back end. And that's what really confused Burrow and kept the Bengals at bay for the most part. That's what, you know, where he shows one look, it's almost like deceptive coverage. Yeah. Maybe that's a better way. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it well.
But, no, it's great.
Yeah.
I you know, if you have an extra man and you can do 2 things with him, you can bring him on a blitz, which often in the McDonald's system is meaning somebody else is dropping from the line of scrimmage anyway, as a zone defender who probably has less value, whether that's Bowser or Owe or somebody else is dropping into coverage who is not the ideal guy. I'm not saying Bowser is bad. Bowser is the best coverage outside linebacker in the game, I still believe, but it's still, you'd rather have a safety in that spot if you had the choice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd rather have a linebacker. But in the case of the Ravens, I think they can rotate somebody to take away one route is another thing to make Burrow worry. And if Burrow's got to worry about a 4-man rush, because normally that's not the case in the NFL. Normally you're able to stop 4-man pressure and the quarterback has some sandwich making time in the pocket. And then he has the ability to really judge the ingredients, make multiple reads and get to one that works. But when you can take one away on the back end and you're also still effective with 4-man pressure, boy, that's a great combination.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. That's what we want to replicate and look towards. Cause I do think that he kind of found that formula, that mixture down the stretch this year. And I think that's also where Roquan brings value. I know we had a podcast last week discussing mostly more the negatives and the positives, but there is a positive element to that where, you know, they can, you give, there was one example I saw floating on earlier where it looked like cover one, and then they rotated down and took away the slant immediately. And that's really been his recipe against Burrow in particular this year.
Your go-to place for wild card round action is DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off the road to Super Bowl 57, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat bet each day of the wild card round this weekend. Just place any NFL bet of your choice, and if it loses, you'll get a free bet back up to $10. Download the DraftKings Sportsback app and use the code FILM. New customers can bet $5 on the NFL and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with the code FILM. Please play responsibly. For help, visit mdgamblinghelp.org or call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus. Physically present in Maryland. Bonus issued as free bets. 1 free bet issued based on amount of initial losing NFL bet up to $10. Eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/MD for full terms and conditions.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Voss, because those bread and butter plays the Burrow will check to. So, like, basically, there's all these possibilities. But anytime there's 2 receivers on one side, it's a wide receiver screen possibility for the Cincinnati Bengals. Okay. Mm-hmm. That they're looking to somehow get a running back out there, get a tight end out there for a second block, but also those two receivers, it's one block and one receiver. Mm-hmm. And so rotating into anything like that can give you numbers against that screen pass, maybe take away a slant as well versus one of those players. So you get multiple advantages out of using one strategy that way. The other thing that I have really liked is anytime you can take away one of the shorter routes against Burrow, you have the potential of taking away his expected hot win. So especially if you blitz off the slot, but also have Williams, for instance, come down and try and take away that slant, or have Queen or Roquan be right in the right position for that slant. If you can do that, then you can really make Burrow feel the heat of that. So I look forward to that against any team next year. I mean, this is a high quality defense. They're going to basically have a lot of the same personnel back. They are going to have to do some additional rebuilding, I think, on the defensive line. But it's very exciting to see where this team might go, and at cornerback.
Right. And again, first season McDonald just went through. Now he has an offseason to evaluate and look and learn. And this is just, you know, the foundation to build upon further. And I think they have a lot of capability of being able to do that, considering he was so vanilla. I mean, no plays the entire season with seven blitzers. I would estimate that you had at least 20 or so last year.
I'll get you that number while we're looking at that, but I'm interested to know now too. But that's certainly something that yes, I would have guessed with last year was Wink. Okay, I'm going to have an over under on this.
Okay,
38 is my over under. I think it was like 6% of pass rushes might have been seven plus. Now, we got to do this. This is too much fun to not do this right now. Okay, but it does take me a second to find this. Okay, I'm studying 2021, defense 2021. Okay, so all season last year, for the complete year, okay, 21, seven-man rushes. So you're closer. 8.2 yards per play. So it wasn't like they really worked out. And they had zero sacks on those plays last year. They did have 4.8% turnovers, which is one turnover out of those plays. And they had six man rushes. They had 48 last year. And how many did I say this year?
I think it was less. Single digits.
Let's see, just a second. It was six man rushes, 21 this year. So they had about significant reduction, about less than a third as many with six plus this year as opposed to last year. So pretty cardinal difference.
You can layer that on too. McDonald can layer that in next year and come up with new wrinkles. And he was apparently the main architect of a lot of Martindale's packages. So he's finding himself. So anyway, I'm excited about McDonald.
Yeah. Lots of reasons, I think, to be that way. I think we talked about everything in the pass rush. Let's move on. Individual player discussion, always one of my favorite topics. And we can talk about a little bit of the individual great playmaking that we saw in this game from the Ravens defense. But Voss, you're the guest. Start us off with somebody you want to talk about.
Kyle Hamilton, play of the game, just completely, totally textbook hit, levels, and then recovers it himself too. But not only that, just a great game, providing pressure, tackling, coverage, just all around. I think he, well, in my view, if there was MVP, I know you don't do MVP after a loss, but he would be the number one MVP. And before the season, everyone was very concerned. After, I think there was a clip of a shifty 5'8" UDFA that burned him, you know, out of the slot on a play at the open practice at the stadium, and people were freaking out. And he did have some struggles in coverage early in the season, and to see how far he's come in 1 year to now he's playing slot cornerback against the Bengals and the best defensive player on the field, quite the journey, really living up to that pre-draft pedigree and a cornerstone piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be one of the big decisions of this offseason for the Ravens to figure out how are they going to increase Kyle Hamilton's playing time? Because in a lot of ways, they don't really need to. If he's going to continue just to play the slot corner role, which I don't think maximizes his skills, but it does create a different center field area for him, as we just kind of talked about a few minutes ago. It's still a very valuable position. And it's now easy to see why the Honey Badger got moved around the way he did over the entire course of his career.
from being a, you know, a free safety, a true strong safety at times, and a slot corner when needed.
Mm-hmm. It seems like they're maybe ahead of the curve with these hybridized players, and I would like to see him in more of a traditional role. It seems now with Roquan locked in and Hamilton's a first round pick and Williams locked in, you need to probably move on from either one of Clark or Queen, in my view, to maximize what you have on defense. But it's a nice wrinkle to have.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's really two different players at two different positions who are creating a logjam of talent. And by the way, that logjam goes away pretty freaking quickly, as it did this year when there's any sort of injury. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Queen goes down, you're like, oh, well, we can play a lot more dime now. And you have Malik Harrison as your weak side linebacker, and you do the best you can with that. Or maybe it's Ross next year or whoever mm-hmm. it might be. And you have, you know, the opportunity to play dime on third down because Chuck Clark, that's what he grew up with basically in this system. And Clark then becomes a hybrid strong safety dime, and you move Hamilton in to basically being, I guess, either maybe next year still a slot corner and a free safety or a back end split safety on those downs, or maybe Geno Stone
overhang position similar to maybe what Stevens was playing down the stretch last year, I think would suit Hamilton pretty well. He could do a lot of different things, you know. Let's not limit him, pigeonhole him. But yeah, you have some options, and I do think that there is a little bit of a logjam going into this offseason. And if you can take away from there and reallocate that somewhere else, you might be better off.
It is one of the places. It's one of the few places where the Ravens could trade real talent for draft capital, and unfortunately, they still won't get a lot for Clark, who has a lot of value to the Ravens. Is that there's just not a lot of value there in terms of what he is. His contract value is such that most other teams don't really understand how to extract that value or aren't in a position to extract that value from Clark. And some of them already have two linebackers. Like, you can't trade him to the Buffalo Bills because the Buffalo Bills already are committed nickel team. Right. And there's a whole bunch of other teams out there that probably shouldn't be committed nickels, but they kind of see themselves as committed nickel, and they're not going to change just because they can get Chuck Clark. And, you know, they'd change if they could get Kyle Hamilton, but they're not going to get to change if they could get Chuck Clark. And so they don't really realize this cerebral, you know, captain of the defense value you're getting out of this player. And so it's hard for them to see it. So if your only option is to trade him to the Jets or the Giants, to really understand who he is, then it's a lot more difficult to get value out of him. So that really means that Queen is the guy who they could trade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something they should explore because, again, I think you're better off with Hamilton, you know, playing, taking on some of those responsibilities, or Clark taking on the responsibilities that Queen had, because, you know, he was not that there was a huge gaping weak link, but his coverage, he was picked on the coverage a little bit in this game.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, they've gotten such good speed play from Queen down the stretch. I'd really hate to see them lose it for next year, because I think it's one of the big advantages is what they have in terms of fast recognition out of Roquan with also speed, but really fast speed out of Queen. He's become more effective as the season's gone on in terms of his ability to impact the game by blitzing. And he's blitzing less to do it. Remember last year, that was all you could do with Patrick Queen. He didn't give you anything in coverage, so you really needed to blitz him. In particular, that's even more true his rookie year, but it's true somewhat last year. This year, he can give you a little bit in coverage, but he can give you more as a blitzer, I think.
Right, and I definitely think there's no question about it. Patrick Queen improved this season, even possibly before the trade. I do think that against ball out quick and short game, quick game, maybe having blitzing your inside backer is the advantage. It is the counterpunch. So there are benefits to having them both, and they have that sideline to sideline speed to take away those bubble screens, as you were mentioning earlier. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, you get Tyus Bowser off the line of scrimmage. Sorry, you get Tyus Bowser dropping from the line of scrimmage if you blitz Queen a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So you get the value of his coverage. And Tyus Bowser can take away some routes. He can take away a slant route. He can really cause problems if you want to get the ball to the outside and you put him in a position to track down a screen pass, because he's very quick as well.
Mm-hmm. For sure. That's just the signature plays of his career, those exact plays.
Yeah. I will talk about a guy I thought just has a great future
based on this game. And I'm really glad to see it because he's had some pressures this year, but Adafi Owe came out with his best game of the year, in my opinion. It was so many big plays. It's really hard to even state them all. And we're not doing an article this week. Travel schedules really didn't allow for it. So Maureen and I couldn't get that done. But he had lots of pressure. He stunted in this game very effectively. He played effectively on the inside in rush dime packages. Now, the rush dime as a whole wasn't all that effective, but Owe himself was quite effective. Did a fair amount of stunting in this game. Did some wonderful bull rushes that we saw. He bull rushed
Williams.
Yep. You know, very effectively for an S-6. That was one of the great sacks you'll ever see. Just club the guy down. And there was a tripping component of it involved, but the amount of force in that club applied properly is going to create some forced fumbles in the future.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic game from Owe. I thought the whole package, his whole skill set was on display in this game. That sack was very impressive. As you said, well, you know, one of the five plays that I kind of put a star next to make sure to bring up, because that's the tantalizing upside that he brings, to have that, to combine that power with that speed, with that length. I almost wonder if the Ravens did him a disservice this season by forcing so many snaps on him for the first four or five weeks. And you just wish that wasn't the case, and you wish they would have had some more, but definitely ended the season on a strong note.
He had the sack himself on that club down play. And I just want to go over the other two that were almost sacks. He beat Jackson Carmen on the play, sorry, where Bowser beat Jackson Carmen for the S-9. He had front side pressure delivered by, I think he was opposite the right tackle, and I didn't actually note it here exactly who he beat for that, but he had the front side pressure to contain that pocket, which made there be nowhere for Burrow to run out of. And he honestly could have been credited with part of that sack, but I think it was a fairly also went to Bowser, who made a very good play on Carmen on that play. And the other thing, it's not called a sack, but with 3rd and 10 with 3:37 to play and the Ravens season on the line, a first down there is going to all but turn off the lights for the Baltimore Ravens. And Bowser generated the pressure to flush Burrow left. Now, normally, I've been thrilled. Any right-handed quarterback who gets flushed left, I think the Ravens have got him now. But the last couple of weeks, it just hasn't worked out that way. Burrow was very effective being flushed left and elusive as hell. And the week before, Pickett was really effective being flushed left and throwing the ball. But anyway, they got him this time. Burrow took off left, and Owe ran him down from a distance. You do not see an outside linebacker run down a quarterback very often. And it held it to a 4-yard gain, did not allow Burrow to get that edge, get those few extra yards that would have just made it very sticky in terms of whether or not it was going to be a first down or not. And that was obviously one of the big plays that gave the Ravens a chance, ended up giving the Ravens a chance right around midfield.
Mm-hmm. He's the player that I think really gives them that high ceiling that they need. So if I can move on to my next one, was his running mate on the edge rusher, Tyus Bowser. I thought he had a very good game. Three cube quarterback hits. He seems like he's back to his disruptive ways of the previous season, last season, where he was just thrust into that role as the anchor of the unit, taking on the most snaps and that sort of thing. These are your two edge rushers going forward, you know, and it's a good pairing to have, I think, with Bowser and away. And just to have Bowser back after that injury, late season injury, fight back the whole season and become one of these, again, just really dynamic, versatile pieces on that second level to add into Roquan and Queen and Hamilton and Clark and all these guys. It's a good place to be. So I just wanted to note Bowser for a good game.
Yeah, he certainly did have a good game, and he has not had the kind of standout year, obviously, the Ravens would have hoped for, but in part because he missed time, but in part also because he just hasn't been playing quite at the Tyus Bowser level since he's been back. He's one of the players the Ravens have got to think about extending again. Now, this is, I believe, the second year of his 3-year extension right now. So if he's got 1 year left, we'll look that up. You'll take a look at that while we're doing that. But that's an exciting possibility. Still a fairly young player and a guy at I think 28 now. If I'm not incorrect about that, Tyus Bowser is
Now he's 27 and 238 days as of right now. So still a guy you can extend if you want to, but his age 28 season will be next year. And if you're extending him, say, for another 2 years, you get 29 and 30 out of that. I think you're probably making a good gamble on a player who's still got something left in the tank.
So he's locked up actually through 24. So he has two
more years. Fantastic.
Yep. It's a 4-year deal. And his cap number is only $6.5 million next year and only $7.5 million in 24 for a starting caliber outside linebacker, above average starting. Mm-hmm. That's a very good deal.
Very versatile guy, definitely can drop the cover and give you that. And the other point you made about Owe earlier, I want to come back to because it's an important Bowser point. Bowser, his value to the Ravens showed up so much in the fact that they had to abuse Owe early in the season, not only by number of snaps, but by where he had to play. He had to play outside on the tight end side, which means he's just a couple things about that are not good. First of all, he has to drop the coverage a fair amount in order to disguise your defense, to allow for blitzes to occur in the way they normally would. The second thing that you put him in a position to do is you don't have him operating against a naked left tackle. Now, Terrell Suggs, honestly, did not have the greatest pass rush tool set to be able to do that. Not a top-end pass rusher, a generational run defender, a good pass rusher who got a lot of sacks over a long period of time, but definitely not that. Owe is the potential to be an outstanding pass rusher in this league, one of the top guys, but he has to start moving on his career of being a pass rush plan guy where he makes his opponent, who will always be the lesser athlete, make the first mistake and then counter off that. He's not going to learn how to do that playing on the strong side against tight ends.
Agree completely. I agree with you on Suggs as well. I think Bulware is the best pure pass rusher they ever had. Third year now, he's had two seasons away. This is really a big offseason for him.
Yeah. McCrary would be my other guy, but you're right. Bulware was just absolutely in his prime, which it didn't last a whole long time, but those first 70 or so games, he was one terrific, terrific player. Mm-hmm. All right. Who else do I want to talk about in this game? Make sure we get to JPP, another big game, contribution to multiple pressures in this game. I had him let me see how many pressures I've got him as being part of here. He actually drew a big holding call that gave the Ravens a chance, and then they blew it anyway and allowed the touchdown on the second drive. But I had him for one pressure, one hold, another pressure. It seems like I've only got him for two pressures here, and it seemed like more when I originally was doing this, but anyway, one pressure, two pressures and the hold. I thought played the run reasonably well, as most of the Ravens did on the outside. The Ravens are certainly using him in that capacity. It's a nice, when you have that player on first and second down that you can trust with either responsibility, and maybe Owe, maybe JPP both fit into this category, because then it gives you, against a lot of the quarterbacks, certainly in the division and the league, that don't want to run against the Ravens, you have somebody who can contribute both ways.
Yes, I agree with JPP. One of the under the radar best signings of the season. He was one point just over the vet minimum this year. So yep. I know it wasn't the full season. If you can get him back for that up somewhere in that ballpark, I think it would be a good move to do. He brings something to the table that they don't necessarily have else, otherwise.
Do you see a market for JPP elsewhere in the league?
I mean, there wasn't much of a market this last offseason. I know he had a down year in Tampa last year. He put a little bit better tape out there with the Ravens. But
he's 34 too.
Right. And you see with Houston, Houston's they both had really strong careers, and there's not guys beating down the door for some of these older guys. That's where I think the Ravens do well to get those third and fourth contract guys when it's a short-term deal like that.
Right. And maybe this is now, maybe JPP, maybe Houston even. Houston is kind of like, it's great to have an incentive working for him. And maybe this is the time you pony up for a 2-year deal for Houston, or just another 1-year deal where you put the incentives out there at a lower level and you say, hey, look, we know you didn't make it last year. We'd like you to make it this year. Let's say it's 7 sacks instead of 10 this year. And actually, they can't do that because that makes it not an LTBE since he had 9.5 sacks, right? So they have to come up with something that you know would be a an easy make for him to do. Maybe it would be they wouldn't really want to put it in playing time, but they'd want to somehow basically allow him to earn back that bonus that he didn't get this year as a kind of a good faith gesture and keep him around that way.
Yeah, as far as culture fit and leadership, I think Houston definitely brings more to the table than JPP. And he's still a little bit younger than him too. I don't think you could probably afford to bring both. I'm not sure. A lot of it depends on this last player that I want to bring up, Marcus Peters. Notable player for this game, had some notable plays. Also, you know, pending unrestricted free agent besides Lamar now. He's the second biggest name on that list. As far as the game, I thought he played pretty well. Did make some nice tackles and run support. Had some nice coverage. Used the end zone to prevent, you know, push the guy out of the back of the end zone when the ball was in the air. Got called for a pass of DPI on the 2-point conversion on a fade route to Higgins that was very reminiscent of Jimmy Smith
Super
or Michael
Bowl.
Crabtree,
yeah. Yes.
And which didn't get flagged. And then the next play, he actually did allow that 2-point conversion, but that was an extended play where he didn't have much of a choice to hold there. The big play, or at least something worth talking about, you know, he brings this swagger and this energy and, you know, like a Brian Billick type kind of player. He got the penalty this game, and I thought he crossed the line on that when he kind of gave
way over the line.
it was like a forearm shiver to the ribs,
the groin. I thought, you know, that's as low as you can go, and normally, again, first guy to do that is the guy who initiates the retaliation, gets the flag, but no way on that. I mean, that was the most obvious up front. If he'd done that at the bottom of a pile, he probably gets away with it. But
right.
If he does that right out in the open like that, and literally, I mean, he went down on a down receiver after the whistle and literally put his left arm right on the guy's groin. I elbow to the groin.
Elbow,
That was a hard hit. I mean, it's just athletic supporters will only do so much.
Yeah, and the Ravens have a history of playing some pretty rough and tumble defensive football in the playoffs. Rich Gannon, Chris Johnson, Jamal Charles. I think Ed Reed gave him a little extra hot sauce in one playoff game, but that was just too far, and he got the flag, and that's not what you want to have happen. So, I don't know where they stand with Peters. It doesn't seem like he's coming back unless he's going to take a haircut.
Yeah, I would expect Peters is going to get a bigger deal somewhere else. I think he did enough in coverage this year that a team who has a coverage deficit will go out and say, hey, we want a ball hawk. May even be the time in his career where he gets moved to safety. And you know, somebody says, you know what? We don't need a cornerback, but we do need a free safety. And Marcus can continue his interception happy ways at a different role. That position, as much as Peters would be excellent at the ball hawk component of it, being the last man necessary to make a tackle is not really his game. Mm-hmm. And, I think some other teams will be unhappy with his missed tackle rate on the back end if that's the way they choose to do it.
I will say he does seem to be a little bit more motivated to make tackles in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't make quite as many business decisions. And when he does bring his pads, he can lay a big hit, a bigger hit than you'd think from watching him play, you know, let guys run down the sideline in the regular season. So
remarkable non-form tackler when around the line of scrimmage, though. I mean, he's literally is bringing his pads and not his arms, mm-hmm. which is something I don't know. Maybe they teach corners to do is don't tackle with your arms, because you tackle with your arms, that's how you get hurt. And so you got a better job. Just go, you know, pads to knees, pads to thighs, try and knock that guy down, knock him back. And, you know, the sack he had this year was of that sort, you know, mm-hmm. one where he used his pads up high on the receiver turned quarterback, I believe it was. I've tried to remember the game exactly.
Yeah.
Browns, maybe Landry, maybe was it, or somebody.
Yeah. Landry. Yep. That was the big play. That was probably his best play of the year.
Yeah. So anyway, lots of things. I think the Marcus Peters era is over, and I will say I have enjoyed every moment of it, or almost every moment of it, in terms of what he's brought to this Ravens team in terms of toughness and ball hawkiness. And you know, a lot of that 2019 defensive turnaround was on Marcus Peters. He certainly provided the Ravens value in the rest of the time he's been here, except when he's been hurt.
Agreed. Oh, yeah. I think it's probably the best acquisition of the Eric DaCosta era so far, at least one of the top few, and definitely enjoyed his time. Always going to remember that that Tennessee game where he sealed it after got a little revenge with that interception. And they said in the during the broadcast he was the most – still has the highest rate of interceptions per for any active player, even though he didn't have quite the ball-hawking season he had this year as he had in years past. So very good player. It's going to be very interesting to see. I think that's probably – I probably agree that he's probably not coming back, and I think that's going to be the big – the one main area where they want to put some resources this offseason.
I mean, they're short at slot corner and they're short on the outside as well. So they need to decide if they want to go into next year with Hamilton still at the same place. I think that'd be a mistake. I think, you know, Hamilton is your trump card. He can fix one position for you anytime during the year, and you can find him snaps even if he doesn't have a position. So I don't if somebody like Pepe were to start the season, or maybe it's whoever they acquire, won't be Pepe, will start the season at slot corner next year. And Hamilton is playing some of the snaps there, and he's also in as a linebacker occasionally, and he comes in and he plays the back end on third down with Clark moving up to play dime, and you have that sort of a mixed position thing. Fantastic. Lay it all on Kyle Hamilton. He seems to be really good at improving. The learning curve seems to be extremely fast with Hamilton. What happened this year, I have a lot of confidence in his ability to learn a new position, period.
Oh, for sure. For sure, Hamilton gives you all that. Just back to the cornerbacks, I mean, you had Darryl Worley as your third cornerback in the playoffs. You're probably going to lose your cornerback too, and you don't necessarily have anybody coming back that has a whole lot of experience besides Brandon Stevens, who I do think could be a pretty good maybe. I'd feel comfortable with him as cornerback four.
Yep,
exactly. Cornerback four. So, and Fuller was a one-year deal, if I recall. Yeah. And Pepe showed that maybe he's not somebody you want near the top of the depth chart. And you don't know what you have in Armour Davis. So, it's probably the thinnest position on the team as far as who's under contract coming into next year right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And very refreshing, frankly, that they didn't have to go to Kevon Seymour. And at one point in 2021, Kevon Seymour was their best cornerback.
Right.
Not their worst. And you know, they had who was the guy they had playing on the outside?
Robert Jackson.
Robert Jackson was on the team number 17. And they had somebody else who was on the field at the same time as Seymour. And I think it was Worley. Obviously that's not a particularly good group of corners, and that, you know, was the basis of the whole DoorDash joke that Wink's been using since he got to New York to basically shy away any questions about what he did in Baltimore. I'm in complete agreement. I think they're going to need to look at cornerback, and they're probably going to need to spend some money there. But if they do decide, hey, we've got a slot corner / special teams ace, and you know they're always going to find guys who can do multiple things that they can come in and get, and this guy's undervalued by another team, but we think he'd be, you know, Corey Ivey for us. They could easily go that way again, also draft a corner, because I don't think that they can go into next season with JAD and Stevens competing to be the second corner.
Yeah, I'd agree. You got to add somebody above Stevens, you know,
right,
on the depth chart for sure, whether that's a first round corner or somebody with some pedigree to them. But, we're talking about how great this defense looks on paper for next year. They got a good-looking stable up front. They got some edge rushers. They have great safeties. They have chess pieces. But if you have a hole of corner too, that could really – it's a house of cards, you know? So, yeah.
And that's certainly – when the Ravens' defense has fallen, despite being great, if you look at 2005, 2007 – some of the years between 13 and 18, and again in 21, it's fallen not because of the front seven positions, or even usually because of safety. It's mostly because of a street of dying men in the secondary, where everybody's just injured and nobody is nobody's able to get up and play football. So
cornerback and offensive tackle seem to be the two positions that can derail your season the quickest.
There you go. Is there anyone else I wanted to mention on this thing? I think we hit on everybody, because we hit on some of these guys, obviously, as we went through this. So I think we're good. No MVPs we're talking about this time. Let's go to the mailbag one more time, see if there's anything we want to answer that maybe somebody else asked. If it's about the offense, that's going to be okay. Okay, let's do this one. This is from Dirk Schwenk, who says, the biggest needs to address next year, question mark for me. One, WTF can we do about the injuries? Two, play caller. And three, do we need outside help in drafting, developing wide receivers? And I guess I'd add a four is cornerback to that group. But let's talk about his WTF and his play caller and the do we need help outside drafting, developing. Start with any of those.
I don't know what you can do about the injuries. I mean, I know people want to bang that drum. Sometimes it's just luck. I don't know. Sometimes it just seems like it's luck. In 2019, they were very healthy. In 2021, they were very, you know, extremely banged up. So can you do some things? I'm sure there's angles they can try to press, levers they could try to press, but I don't know what that's going to be. Go ahead.
I don't think it's anything about the rehab from the injuries necessarily, but let me just say this. The medicine and technology for detecting injuries early is growing at a ridiculous rate. We had a couple of guys on from Brazil who have their own system for South American soccer. And by the way, soccer allows you to determine that much easier by the nature of the uniforms, is that the players are standing there and they're more close to naked than football players are, which allows you to look at muscular heat differently. And it was very interesting, but obviously football players wearing pads and all, you can't get a clear reading on heat coming off their bodies the same way. And so, you know, they basically had put together a system where players would go into a chamber where they'd basically drop their pants and I guess take off their top too and get muscular readings for heat. Then they'd get it after practice, look at deltas of muscular heat. I mean, but those are the kind of things. It's not necessarily that particular system, by the way, but it's looking at all the available technology. This is not a cap expense. So, you know, I'm sorry, Steve Bisciotti, but I'm going to try and spend some of your money. And I'm sure you will, because you've been fantastic about putting money into the facility and everything. But trying to protect your investment in these players and find ways to keep them healthy by spending money on systems. There's a lot of systems out there. There's a lot of different things that could be tried. And by the way, it's not a case where things can't be attempted concurrently, because a lot of these things might cost $500,000, $1 million per year. And I'm not saying that's a tiny amount of money, but when you compare it to the value of these of you know what might be going on, it's very affordable compared to what you could lose. Yeah.
No question. And you've heard rumors, I think it was Derek Wolf earlier this season that was saying that maybe Harbaugh practices too hard. You know, I've been out of practice. It doesn't look too hard to me, but you know, well, I don't know what he's comparing it to. Some of these former players have an axe to grind. Some don't. Who knows what's what?
Bit of Bernard Paulitis there.
I think so. I think there might be some. You know, you're going into this offseason a hell of a lot healthier than you were last year. Especially to have Ronnie. I think the biggest thing with the injuries, don't leave yourself short at those. Cornerback and offensive tackle. If you could always be set steady there, you could find a guy. It's a lot of other positions that could get you by if you need to, compared to those two. So,
how do you feel about the Ravens there in terms of offensive tackle? They have a mix of some age, a little bit of youth. The problem is that most of their quality is in age. So
I feel pretty good about how Falele showed for a really raw guy. I know he didn't grade fantastically, but I'm hopeful that a big offseason can give him that. I think he's a better tackle than Tyree Phillips ever was. So moving in the right direction there, I think.
All right. I'm not sure I'm quite there on the Tyree Phillips comparison, but I admit neither one is really at the level that you want it. And he has more upside. Tyree was more moved around and kind of jerked around in terms of his position, frankly, with the Ravens. But they did give him lots of opportunities to get it right before they couldn't trade him and then finally had to cut him. With Falele, I think he looked really good in this game as a sixth offensive lineman. And I would like to see them use him more in that capacity, particularly if you're going to continue to be a run-focused team, which I think is likely at the minimum if you have Lamar next year, that you're going to continue to start your offense from that spot. And the problem is, I don't think Falele is ready to step in at left tackle, and you need a guy who can do that. McCary is not really that guy either. I know he's had some success, and Ravens fans kind of love an underdog, but honestly, neither McCary nor Falele has played particularly well at tackle.
when asked to be in there. Moses has played well, and Stanley played well, and that's great that your starters are playing at a reasonably high level. Neither of them is a Pro Bowl player at this point. That's really a shame to have to say that about Ronnie Stanley, but he's gonna have to get back to being a Pro Bowl player.
I'd agree with that. So yeah, if there's an offensive tackle that's close to the top of your board that has that blindside skill set, I would love to take. I think you keep swinging at those positions in the draft if you can.
Would you take a developmental guy?
Yeah, that's Spencer exactly Brown what I'm saying. Out there. Yeah, like a Spencer Brown or a Greg Sinnott. You know, just one of those long, angular guys that can mirror. Really, that's mirror well. So second part of Dirk's question is a play caller. I think we're expecting an announcement to be made some point this week. I personally think that somebody from the Shanahan Kubiak tree would be a best option. I think you want to still stay run first. I think that makes sense with the existing personnel you have and also the quarterback you hopefully still have. What names are out there? I mean, you know, just take a look at the trees. I don't think a Cliff Kingsbury going to spread. I don't think that makes a lot of sense personally.
If you saw the pictures today, Cliff Kingsbury might be having a lot of fun in Thailand. Look at things. By the way, if you're going to have a lot of fun in some country, Thailand's probably not the place. There's just a lot of risk with fun in Thailand.
Isn't it that the movie, The Hangover Part 2 or something?
Yeah, there you go. All the things. So anyway, I would agree. I think the one thing I want to see coming out of this change, and I expect there to be a change because I don't think Harbaugh is going to invest his own personal capital. And I think he'd almost pretty much have to go all in to say, no, I want to keep Roman. I really don't want to make this move. He'd be going all in on his own coaching career in 23 if it didn't work out at offensive coordinator. So I don't think he's going to do that. He's going to basically say, yeah, you know, we're right, Eric. You know, we're right, Steve. We'll make this change. And let's try and find somebody. And I hope the thing he really asked for is let's find a scheme diverse guy, meaning not just, I'm not just talking pass run because that goes all the time, but I'm talking about a run diverse scheme. I don't want a guy who's all gap, all zone, all anything. I think the Ravens can do it all pretty well. And if they maintain the largest possible threat in the run game, I think that would be cool. And also you cannot neglect a guy who can bring in and implement layers that will really improve the passing game and you know, make use of both tight ends and wide receivers. Don't go all in on all wide receivers. It's got to be those guys. And, you know, we've got to develop James Crochet into something he's not. And right. Don't go all out to be, you know, we have to get every tight end on the roster, you know, 35 catches, because that's not going to work either.
I think what you want is what Mike McDonald showed on the defensive side of the ball. You want adaptability. That's really what it is. You want your personnel to be flexible, adaptable. You also want your play caller to be, and that segues into the third question. Do the Ravens need outside help in drafting/developing wide receivers? This is a conversation I've been having for a better part of a year, and I don't think the problem is they're not developing them well enough. I think they need to invest more into them. I think some people get a little bit too excited when they see press clips of people winning 7-on-7 drills and sometimes not every sixth round pick, fifth round pick, and fourth round pick at wide receiver is going to develop into a starting caliber player. The hit rate on those players is, you know, 10, 15, 20% for anybody picked on day three. You need to invest more. I know there's been some thought and some look how much that Eric DaCosta invested in the draft. Okay, maybe he did, but he also traded away one of the players before his rookie contract was over, and he also spent the 31st most on free agents at the wide receiver position since Lamar's been drafted. So, you know, investment is both draft investment and free agent dollars, cap dollars. So if you're not spending cap dollars, you should really put a lot into the draft, I think.
Well, let's see how they address it differently next year. I'm very hopeful that Bateman's decision to have the surgery when he did means his recovery does not extend past the beginning of this coming season. That is a very big deal for the Ravens. If it does, then the Ravens are in a deep, deep hole starting the season without Rashad Bateman. And if he's back mid-year, if he missed the year, oh my God. But if he's back mid-year, I mean, that's going to be a huge loss for the Ravens.
Right, and you should have Duvernay back at some point. So I think Duvernay is a good number three. You just really need a strong number two.
Yeah, I really don't know where Duvernay is in terms of his injury. I don't know what it is yet. So do we know?
That's a great question, Ken. That one did kind of, they did kind of sweep that under the rug a little bit, didn't they? Mm-hmm.
So
I don't recall that off the top of my head either.
If it's Liz Frank related, I mean, that could be 2023 gone for Duvernay if at the point he was lost.
Now that you say that, I do think it was a Liz Frank, unfortunately. Okay. I'll look that up if all you right. want to.
No, that's okay. We're fantastic discussion. Always a great discussion about franchise building, individual games, whatever it was with his Voss. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. He's at Vasilis Beatdown, and he is the co-managing editor of Baltimore Beatdown. Also great stuff over there. Lots of great people over there. Kyle Barber, I really enjoy talking football with him when I can. And Jake Luke has been on the show before and done a really good job. But Voss, you're welcome all the time.
Thank you. No, Jake, Kyle, and I have all been together at Beatdown for, I think, going on 7 years, I think. So it's been a while now.
That's a long, long time in the podcast / business like that. There aren't too many old. You're a real old timer if you've been around for 10 years. You know. All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. It's off season coming up. I'd love to hear from you. I talked a little bit about a new show we're going to have coming up that talks about one play from Ravens history and really tries to trim this down to maybe a 15-minute episode. I'd like to do a lot of those if we can this off season. Have some fun with it. Not a ton of prep time. All you need to do is just hit me up with the one play you'd like to talk about. Why was it pivotal in Ravens history? Why, you know, maybe it was an injury that occurred that you know, ruined things for the Ravens. Like Lardarius Webb's injury in 2012 would be that kind of a play. And then they talk about history in other ways. Or maybe it was a big play that propelled them in the playoffs. Like we just talked about, obviously, this horrible play last night, which doomed the Ravens. But in 2000, they had a similar play that went the other way. And the Mile High Miracle was another one that was similarly went the Ravens' way. But whatever you'd like to talk about, I'd love to talk to you on one of these plays about the great plays in Ravens history individually. Other folks out there, if you wouldn't mind, take a look, give the show a good review. If you're still listening after almost 2 hours of content with Voss and me, would really appreciate it. And if you don't mind, give us a review. We'll like that. Hit subscribe and like on the YouTube channel where you are not at now. You're on a podcast, but we have a YouTube channel and we do put videos out there, particularly the analytic ones that require some graphical content. And if you want to follow that, we'd appreciate it as well. Voss, thanks again for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk football with you, my friend.
My pleasure, Ken. Thank you for having me. Always enjoyed very much, very much. And we'll gear into the off season now, but it was a fun season and really enjoyed this.
I'm sure we'll talk many times this off season, and we'll talk to you folks next time on Film Study.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.